Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. Alongside Craig Burley, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us for another edition of the show. We'll be joined a little bit later on by Colin Udo for a full recap on all the action from the Africa Cup of Nations. But let's start with the one match in the Premier League on this Tuesday, Craig. Chelsea visiting Brighton. Chelsea starting the day third, Brighton ninth, 28th minute. Hakim Ziyech going to open the scoring for Chelsea at the near post.
A goal came out, I mean, it's lovely to see him celebrate with a lot of vigour. It's probably summed up his performances in recent weeks, but it comes out of nothing. He seemed like the unhappiest man on the planet to score a good goal.
Brighton get a deserved equaliser on the hour mark. Adam Webster, the header.
Horrendous marking, but a great corner, and he peels around the flat-footed Chelsea defenders. Webster was actually excellent all night, as were Brighton. Great goal.
And that's how it would end between Brighton and Chelsea, the two teams splitting the points. 1-1, your final score. What does it mean for the table? Well, Chelsea missing out on an opportunity to leapfrog Liverpool into second place. Chelsea then still third. The gap to Manchester City now 12 points. For more on this, we welcome into the show Shaka Hislop and Steve Nicol. But Craig, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Chelsea's performance today?
Lackluster. Unsurprising. It's interesting, one of the few, if only, things that Thomas Tuchel could offer up was, in his post-match interview, was, we're tired.
That's what he said about Ziyech's celebration, that he was too tired to celebrate. I guess you're not buying it?
Absolute nonsense. I mean, how unhappy did he look to score? He's been awful recently. I mean, he should be celebrating. He even started when Thomas Tuchel named the team. But, you know, clearly they're lacking their two best wing-backs. They changed the shape tonight. But there's no zip. There's no pace. There's no dynamic, you know, running around and performance levels from this team. They've lost their identity. The whole front four, no matter who he puts in, are not playing well. And they flaff around in the middle of the park and around the box, looking for this perfect pass all the time. They need to get balls into the box. They're just... He's just lost his way, Thomas Tuchel. And the only thing he could offer up, he was that they were tired. Now, I would hasten to add, apart from Burnley, who have had almost every game called off recently, every other team is tired too. That's really no excuse.
Stevie, I think what makes it more disappointing from a Chelsea standpoint is you were looking for a bounce-back performance after what we saw against Manchester City. Clearly, they didn't get that.
Yeah, well, Craig said they were lacklustre. There's definitely a lack of cohesion. But I'd like to go back to the being tired part. What a sorry excuse that is. Are you serious? I mean, Zajic hasn't played that much this season. He can hardly be tired. Lukaku... has had a spell where he's had a rest. It may have been an injury. But then he didn't play a couple of weeks ago either. So he's not been overplayed. Hudson-Odoi hasn't been overplayed. Mason Mount didn't play last week. And then you bring on Havertz, who hasn't played that much. And Timo Werner, who hasn't had that much time either. So where's this tiredness coming from? They had plenty of the ball and got it into the final third on enough occasions that you're pointing a finger at that lot. Every single one of those that I've just said who shouldn't be tired, you're pointing the fingers at them. And that's what he should have been doing instead of throwing all this "they're tired" nonsense in. My goodness. You've got a £100 million striker who thrives on balls into the box, but they don't put a ball in the box. So how about you look at yourself and figure your team out and mix it up? Because I'm not suggesting you just start flinging balls in the penalty area. Because Brighton, of course, have got two centre-backs that are, 6'8" and 9". But you've got to mix it up. And they didn't mix it up. And that has to be down to the coach, as far as I'm concerned. Not being tired.
Shaka, you agree this on Tuchel?
Yes. And I think it goes further than just that the excuse that he offered. I mean, not just about balls coming into the box, but Lukaku has been at his best when he's played in counter-attacking teams, right? Whether we're talking Everton or Inter Milan, that's when he's at his best. But as you watch this game, I don't think Chelsea could be any slower. I don't think they could be any slower coming out of the back. I don't think they could pass the ball any slower coming out of midfield. So by the time they got the ball into the attacking third, everybody, there's 20 players within 25 yards of Brighton's goal, and just no space for Chelsea to operate in. No real creativity because Jorginho is sat deepest of the midfielders. There's no space for Lukaku, Hudson-Odoi to run into. The Ziyech goal just comes out of frustration. I think frustration because he's not been playing. When he has been playing, he's not been playing well. And then in the game today, he was camped so far away from the attacking third himself that he just decided to lash one. And somehow it sneaked in at the near post. We can have a little talk about Sanchez as far as that goes. But other than that, you're looking at a Chelsea team that are supposed to be threatening at the top of the table that really are offering nothing against anybody who has any idea of a game plan themselves.
It's team selection as well, isn't it? I mean, I know they're missing players, but every team's missing players. Welcome to the fight for top four, Chelsea.
I mean, so that's really the next question here, because you expressed that you had some concern. Is that concern growing now that they could, I mean, realistically miss out on the top four? It is a ways to fifth.
I don't think they will, but that's not to say there won't be at some point some fight for the top four. I think they should be better than the other teams that are fighting there. If you've watched Man United play recently, certainly Arsenal have got better. Tottenham, difficult to see. West Ham falling away a little bit. But anyway, it's not good, clearly. Mm. Going from the team to beat a couple of months ago, maybe just a little more, which they were, to nothing more than also-rans.
Why aren't they more dangerous?
But the one point I want to make, one of them is the team selection. Kovacic, again to Stevie's point, was a player who was actually out, injured. I think he might have had a COVID problem, but he was certainly injured. He came back in, scored that wonderful goal and was their best player against Liverpool, if memory serves me right. Then he was their best player, one of them certainly, at Man City, and a poor performance, but he was going sniping around, trying to win the ball back and, you know, certainly better than the rest. And then he's on the bench.
Mm.
You know, he can't be that tired, can he? You put your best midfielder who gets on the front foot and passes the ball forward on the bench. Somebody needs to slip a little note under Thomas Tuchel's door and remind him that he's working for one of the most ruthless owners in world football. Yes, he has a Champions League in the bank, and they may well have one this year, who knows? They're in Carabao Cup final. FA Cup. However, this owner thrives on league titles and league title challenges. He doesn't thrive on being 20-odd points, potentially, behind league winners. That's not what drives him. And this is becoming a bit of a problem. I think he's got money in the bank, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, but that money drains away quickly with this owner and with performances like that.
Speaking of team selection, he obviously picked Lukaku to start in this one. Stevie, we've been paying so much attention to Lukaku, the service to him. What can Chelsea do to get more service to him? What'd you make of his performance against Brighton?
I think he looked lost. You know, generally when you have your side going forward, when you're coaching them, you have certain little patterns of play that you can go to whenever you're struggling. And they really don't seem to me to have a go to. You know, Lukaku, on more occasions than not, is just basically standing, watching in the box because he has no idea when it's coming in. You know, you wonder if they've got little focal points where if a ball's played a certain way, right, it has to be played in first. Like Jorginho, for example, used to play balls from the middle of the park without even looking in behind. Things like that, just little things like that can change a game. It doesn't seem Chelsea have that. And it doesn't seem to me as though Lukaku knows whether if it's Hudson-Odoi on one side or Zaic on the other or Pulisic or basically anybody who's playing on a wide area for Chelsea, it doesn't seem to me that there's any connection or any idea of when the ball's coming in, if it's coming in, and if it is coming in, where does Lukaku want it? There seems to be absolutely nothing. And again, that comes down to coaching.
To the point about service to Lukaku, because this is something that Tuchel actually talked about on Monday, just before the match against Brighton. He had some kind of interesting comments when asked directly about Lukaku. He said, quote, "It's a team sport, not about 10 players serving one player. This is not Chelsea or football. Every player serves one team. This will never change." Shaka, did Chelsea or Tuchel, did you sense that they changed anything today to try to get Lukaku the ball? Because for me, it felt like, man, probably 10 or 15 minutes into the match before he really started to even get a touch.
Yeah, no, I don't think they did anything to play to Lukaku's strengths. And listen, a couple of weeks ago, when after the Lukaku interview came out with the Italian press, I was very critical of Tuchel and how he failed to defend Lukaku then. I thought what he said, and we read excerpts there, around defending Lukaku, who's become the face of Chelsea Football Club. I don't have a problem with that at all. But talking about that this is a team that lacked in the attacking sense, and not just because of Lukaku, and it's something that they have to work on. I didn't see that at all in the game today. I didn't feel that anything Chelsea had to offer going forward was around Lukaku's strengths, was to anybody's strengths going forward, in all honesty. And so it amazed me, kind of going back to his post-game press conference and about being tired. I find that a really strange excuse to offer, and we've said this time and time again, you offer a team an excuse to lose, they're going to take it. I really find that strange from Tuchel, when his focus needs to be on how he gets the best of the weapons that he has. Because he can call on Havertz, he can call on Werner, who offers something different. Use them later on in the game against Brighton. But just in terms of before they even came on, there was nothing that played to anybody's strengths, whether we're talking Lukaku, Ziyech or Jorginho.
Do you know what it looks like to me?
That's bad man management.
Go on, Stevie.
That's bad man management. You know, regardless of what you think of Lukaku, if you're Tuchel and you're asked that question, the answer is, we are going to try and do everything we can to get Lukaku the ball in dangerous areas so that we can score goals and he can score goals. That's the answer. And that shouldn't be difficult from a manager. You don't turn around and basically custard pie him and say, well, it's not about him, it's about the team and blah, blah. That's not what you do. That's terrible man management.
It sounds like a manager that doesn't want to change.
If he's that fragile that he's talking about things a couple of weeks ago, then surely you want to help. The only thing you can do is to try and make the thing better so that he scores goals, which benefits him and benefits the rest of the team as well. You don't go just knocking him down again. That's just poor man management.
Is somebody... have they bought a hugely expensive striker that has come as a surprise to Thomas Tuchel, the way that he plays and what his strengths and weaknesses are?
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Has this all of a sudden hit him in the head and gone, oh, maybe he likes some balls into the box?
Do you think he's
being facetious here? I mean, did he not watch Inter Milan?
Is he just mishandling this situation, or is the shine kind of off Tuchel, the man manager, at this point? And maybe even the manager?
I think he's lost a bit of shine. The mask has slipped a little bit at the moment. The one thing I would say, going back to Lukaku, is, and some of this is down to himself, because when you give interviews, you leave yourself open, particularly in the manner in which he did. But he looks to me in games when he's getting little service. I think he had one real opportunity in the second half, but it was half a chance and the keeper came out and blocked it from an angle. But he looks to me as every time a header goes wide or there's a ball played too long or it's not played into the box and Chelsea don't get the result, when the camera pans to him, he looks like a man that knows the questions are going to be about him. And the manager has done him no favours off the back of the weekend's poor performance and result at Man City by mentioning him by name and then tried to backtrack. So the whole thing's a bit of a mess at the moment, stemming from the interview, stemming from, you know, the way I think it was dealt with. And now, on top of that, pretty much the whole team are not playing particularly well, given the fact that there is two or three of them out of contract as well at the end of the year. It's a difficult situation. It's not dissimilar to Frank Lampard in a sense. Things at this club turn very quickly.
Yeah.
For the
managers worse. Especially, yeah.
It turns quickly for the worse at Chelsea. It's amazing that, but it's happening again. Now, as I said earlier, I don't know what the boys think, but he's got enough in the bank at the moment via the Champions League win and others, but at Chelsea, it turns... When it hits the iceberg, the water comes on fast, put it that way. Mm. And at the moment, he's going to have to solve that. Because if bang-average teams get in the top four in front of them, he's in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're nine points to fifth.
I don't expect them to not get in the top four, but all I'm saying is, if they're overhauled for that, then he's getting a taxi.
We'll leave it there for now as the pressure mounts on Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea. Plenty more on this over on our YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe. We are now over 1.2 million. Don't miss a single bit of bonus material from the show.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Here's a look then at Ousmane Dembele's stats since arriving at Barcelona in 2017 for well over 100 million euros. Of course, there's been lots of injuries, but right now he's in his last 6 months of contract with Barcelona, so decision time for both the player and the club as talks of a potential renewal continue. For more on that, we welcome into the show Gemma Soler, who joins us from Barcelona. Gemma, these negotiations have been anything but smooth. What's the latest?
Hola, hola, Seb. Yeah, it's been something like a soap opera, something that it's very common in Barcelona lately. So there was an ultimatum, a 48 hours ultimatum. So we are between the last 24 hours to have an answer. And the board of members of Barcelona, they are starting to lose their patience because they have been waiting so long. And the player has been sending different messages because he's been saying, he even shake hands with Xavi, with his coach, saying that he will be staying, and he's sending that message to some teammates, to Xavi, to the president, even to sports director Matteo Alemany, but this never translates into an agreement when they try to sit with his agent Moussa Sissoko. So they don't have any news other than that interview that Sissoko gave to Radio Monte Carlo. So they are kind of upset. And at this point, Barcelona thinks that there is no possible way to have an agreement with this player.
You mentioned the agent Sissoko. In that interview, he says that Barcelona are trying to intimidate Ousmane Dembele with a threat effectively of not playing him until the end of the season if he doesn't sign this renewal. So Gemma, how do you see this playing out? Are they really going to bench Dembele for the rest of his time in Barcelona?
Well, Seb, that's a possibility. We have three possible scenarios. One, that he agrees to renewal and he stays. At this point, I think it's almost impossible. The second is that his agent, Sissoko, comes and says, we are not interested with this offer. We have another offer of this Premier League club or any other team. And Barcelona makes some money of the second most expensive signing in his history. This is kind of unlikely because they will lose the chance to have a signing bonus. And what I think it's more likable is the third option is problems, drama. So he won't be renewing. There will be no answer. He has to stay. And Barcelona knows that he will be leave for free. So Xavi always said he won't be sitting him in the stands. But some board of members, they say that they really tried. They put a lot of effort, a lot of patience with this player, and he didn't act well. And they think they will try to, they can convince Xavi to sit him on the stands because he hasn't been loyal to Barcelona. And when Xavi said that he will never sit him on the stand, of course, he didn't have any kind of forward. So why would he do that? Now he has Pedri, he has Ansu Fati, he has Ferran Torres, and he has more options. So that's a real possibility, and actually is what Barcelona did earlier this summer with Ilash Moriba. He didn't want to renew, so he was sitting on the stands, and eventually he find a club that put some money in the Barcelona poor bank right now.
Right then, Gemma, let's focus in, if we can, on Real Madrid. The report yesterday from our very own Julian Laran that PSG are feeling more and more confident that they can sign Kylian Mbappe to at least a short-term contract extension. For the last few months, we've been thinking it's a done deal, right? Kylian Mbappe is going to go to Real Madrid this summer. What's been the reaction there in Spain?
Well, Real Madrid still think it's almost a done deal. Florentino Perez is very confident. Even they are not saying it publicly. Of course, officially they are not saying that, but that's what they talk in the White House. Actually, Florentino Perez, he didn't say a word when he gave that interview after winning the Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia. But that's what they think, and they think they put a lot of effort. They try this summer. They even make a $200 million offer. They decided to wait. So for them, there's no possibility, at least is what they say to the closest parts, that there is no possibility for them to wait one more season for this short contract that would make PSG for the World Cup, for what's happening. They will make them happy. There's no chance for that. At least is what they say now. They put an example like what they did with Sergio Ramos. They gave him a renewal option. He said no. He tried to find something better. He didn't. Then he came back and there was no more offer. So they put that example. They want Mbappe now because they think they have the money now. And if it's not him, they will try to find another flamboyant signing like Haaland or any other player. So that's the position of Real Madrid. They even think that they could sign him before the end of the season, even they won't be making it possible till summer. So that's what they think in Madrid right now.
Gemma, with the latest from across La Liga, from Barcelona. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it, Gemma.
Thank you, Seb. Bye-bye, amigos.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Decisive day at the Africa Cup of Nations. Here's how it went down in Group C. Morocco and Gabon playing to a 2-2 draw result that saw both of them advance, but the shocking result, Ghana falling 3-2 to the Comoros Islands. Ghana winless in all three of their matches at the Africa Cup of Nations, and they are eliminated at the group phase. For more, we welcome in ESPN correspondent Colin Udo. Colin, give us a little perspective on what's happened with this Ghana team, really a disastrous Africa Cup of Nations campaign.
This is me being speechless, like totally, absolutely speechless. Ghana do not go out in the first round of an Africa Cup of Nations, especially not to Comoros. And this is amazing. Look, this Ghana team, they've got too many young players. They've got too many older players who are supposed to be leaders who are not being leaders. And then, you know, this is not what they should be doing. You know, they need to do much better than this. And heads are definitely going to roll. And it's got to start with the coach. And it's got to start with the senior players. There needs to be a clear out in that Black Stars team. There is a meltdown going on in Ghana right now. And I think it's deserved. And these players have got to go.
Didn't qualify for the last World Cup. And, of course, World Cup qualifying coming up later this year. Desperate times for Ghanaian football. Second place in that group goes to Gabon. Colin, what else can you tell us about what's going on with Aubameyang, who's obviously had to leave the tournament, and where that leaves Gabon as they head into the round of 16?
Exactly. Look, Ghana are never going to leave this thing down. never. And the same thing seems to be going to happen to Aubameyang. He was sent home. The official report is that it was COVID issues. Remember, he had lesions in his heart after he contracted COVID. But there's unofficial speculation out of Gabon that they broke camp rules. He went outside, went partying, got plastered, and came back, and they wouldn't stand for it. And that's why he's getting sent home back to Arsenal. So, I mean, despite all of that, Gabon still managed to qualify. So maybe they will think, maybe we don't need Aubameyang after all.
Elsewhere in Africa Cup of Nations action, Group B wrapping up on Tuesday. Malawi and Senegal playing to a scoreless draw. Senegal still your group winner despite winning just one of three matches in group play. Elsewhere, Zimbabwe 2-1 over Guinea. Guinea advancing to the round of 16 as well. Malawi on 4 points. Good shot to get in as one of those third place teams advancing. All right, Colin, so let's dive in a little bit on Senegal. Just one win from three in the group phase and only one goal scored, and that was from the penalty spot. Weren't these the pre-tournament favorites?
They were one of them. Senegal, Algeria, were even Egypt were pre-tournament favorites. But, you know, I think this is what happened. They're just giving maybe, you know, some kind of thumbs nose up to people who thought that the African Nations Cup would not do well with 24 teams. The small teams are standing up. The big ones are falling up, falling like a pack of cards. And I think that Senegal have really got to look themselves in the mirror. They only scored one goal, a disputed penalty, and they were just this close from going out of the tournament.
Senegal still favorites for you, Colin, or is somebody else taking that mantle?
No, I don't think Senegal are favorites anymore. Look, the group stages can be the group stages. You see teams come out, they struggle, they squeak through the group stages. Italy have done that before. And they go into the knockout, and things just turn completely around. But I don't fancy Senegal that much. I fancy Cameroon to go all the way. I fancy Nigeria to go all the way. And I still think Mali, the dark horses, might be the one to surprise people even more.
All right, then let's take a look at the upcoming schedule at the Africa Cup of Nations for the week. A couple games on Wednesday, including Egypt and, as Colin mentioned there, Nigeria. On Thursday, the big one, Ivory Coast against Algeria. Algeria also, Colin, pre-tournament favorites are basically playing for their lives in that match Thursday, aren't they?
Exactly. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think they're going to make it. I don't see them beating Ivory Coast. I think that's going to end in the tie, and Algeria will go home early just like Ghana. But the thing is, I don't think people in Algeria are going to be maybe too upset with the coach. Maybe they won't be too upset about the results they've got so far. But, you know, I think the World Cup is the big prize for them. And maybe, just maybe, I think they had their eyes fixed on that prize and haven't really focused too much on the Africa Cup of Nations.
Colin, great stuff as always. Appreciate the time. Plenty more from Colin on today's edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. Colin joined by, among others, that man on your screen, Craig and Shaka as well, as we take your questions.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fulham putting on a show on Tuesday, 6-2 winners over Birmingham City, a result that sees them 5 points clear atop the championship. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Craig.
You can take all this cold weather back to DC with you.
You think I'm in charge of it? We'll see you next time here on the show. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Craig Burley, Sebastian Salazar, a smiling Shaka Hislop, and Colin Udo, who joins us from Colin. Where are you, Buffalo, and what's the weather like there?
Well, yeah, Buffalo, and I've got 16 and a half inches of snow pouring down. I think it's, never seen anything like it, and hopefully never again.
It probably won't see it next week.
I wish Shaka would come here anyway and get a taste of this.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Shaka.
No.
Colin, we can't even get him to come here. Joe's down the road.
Colin will be in Cameroon for the Africa Cup of Nations next week, so that'll be quite a shock to the system. First question, if you were Kylian Mbappe...
You're not getting out of Buffalo if it snows anymore.
No. How many flights do you think it is from Buffalo to Cameroon? That's a tale for Colin next time he's on Extra Time. Would you renew with PSG if you were Kylian Mbappe? If so, for how long?
Well, that's an easy answer. No.
No.
So the second... There's no answer to the second question.
Why not?
I think it's time for him to move out of French football. PSG, as a generalisation, have dominated, apart from last season. Yeah, they might win the Champions League this year, but that's a big might the way they've played. Unlikely. So, yeah, I think it's time to move, and we know the potential suitor, which is, or many suitors, but the favourite is Real Madrid.
Shaka, what do you think? Would you stay at PSG if you were Messi? I mean, if you were Messi. If you were Mbappe?
Nope. Mbappe. Nope. I'm with Craig on everything he just said. Given his relationship with PSG, their failure to at least win the Champions League so far, the fact that he wants to kind of be seen as the face of a football club, which he has not, and for the foreseeable future probably will not be at PSG. I think the time is right for him to move on.
Who's been the worst $100 million signing? Hazard or Lukaku?
Oh, Hazard.
Yeah.
For sure.
Could it end up being Lukaku? Things go much worse?
No, he's got a few goals. Chelsea's struggles are not just down to Lukaku. I think Eden Hazard went in there as the guy who'd carried Chelsea for quite a few years and was going to go in there and be the next Galactico, and just has not worked. So I would say Eden Hazard.
Colin, you agree Hazard the bigger bust here?
Oh, I mean, what has he done since he's been there? He's done absolutely jackal, and there's no sign he's going to be anything. Talk about being a Galactico, he's not even a candlelight.
Sorry, I need a minute to recover from that one. For the lads, rank these talented young African players: Kudus, Diallo, Moriba, Osimhen. Colin, you first. Give us that one through four of those four players.
Of course, I'll start with Osimhen. Look, he's been phenomenal for Nigeria, and barring injury, with the same thing for Napoli. And then I'd go with Kudus, Moriba, and Diallo in that order.
All right.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, you'll stick with Colin's answer? Okay. At this point of the Premier League season, what team has pleasantly surprised you with their performance? Shaka, you first.
No, I was going to say.
There are a few. And then we saw one today. Brighton and Hove, Albion, I thought have been very good so far. Brentford have been very impressive for a newly promoted team, a team that's making their debut in the Premier League. I have to say so far, West Ham have exceeded expectations, even though those expectations were raised last season. So those are the ones I think have stood out, particularly Brentford and Brighton.
You like how he gave us like a couple other answers before he got to West Ham to kind of cover it up a little bit?
Well, I would say West Ham, because I wasn't expecting West Ham to be as competitive as they've been. I was expecting Brighton to have a good season because they have a really good young manager, you know. Well, maybe you don't know.
You love Graham Potter, yeah.
I think he's an excellent young coach, and that's reflective of their play on the field. But I think the fact that West Ham have been hovering around the top four and in the top four at one point is certainly superseded all expectations, I think, in East London.
Can we talk about something we have not talked about enough on this show?
FIFA.
No. Manchester Ballon United d'Or. Potential managers.
Messi, Ronaldo, who's the best? Mbappe to Real Madrid.
Nope. Does
Erling Haaland?
Does Pochettino or Ten Hag have the capabilities to coach the current United squad with the mindset that they have? Ooh, I feel like that the mindset that they have was thrown in there just for you, Craig.
The answer is yes, but you're still going to have to offload a few chances, players.
Who would you have between those two for United?
So, who?
Pochettino or Ten Hag?
Oh. Cool, good question, that. I like both. I don't like what Pochettino's doing at PSG in terms of the way they're playing. That's a difficult sort of ship to sail, isn't it, with all those egos.
Mm-hmm.
But then Ten Hag at Ajax have been, it's been excellent, I don't know. I'm going to say Ten Hag.
Really?
Yeah, I'm on the edge. I don't know. I don't know.
You don't value experience in the Premier League?
No, 50-50.
Okay. Shaka, do you agree? Would you have Ten Hag over Pochettino for United?
No, I'd have Pochettino because of that Premier League experience. And I think despite how disappointing things have gone in Paris, I think there's value to that experience with players of the egos that he's had to manage and try to manage as best he can. Seeing that is a close call. I mean, Ten Hag is a different prospect in that, given Manchester United's own kind of history with bringing through players from their academy and using young players, that's exactly what Ajax has always done, and Ten Hag is doing to such good effect right now. So in all honesty, I don't think you go wrong with either. But if I had to choose one right now, and I'm in charge of Manchester United, I go Pochettino.
It's nice to see you haven't got any branding on your top tonight, Shaq.
I quickly changed before we came on here, Craig.
Yep.
Just for you.
Yep. Yep, he does have that way, right, of influencing you know, how you behave. Yep. No,
Well,
I used to carry a laptop around everywhere I go, but I got bullied out of that.
2 days wearing a Howard shirt back to back. Yeah, I was going to wear another Howard shirt, but, you know, I didn't want to confuse Craig too much.
That's right, it's HUTV over here.
Well, you've been on 2 days in a row, confused me straight away.
All right, final question. A perfect question for extra time. Start, bench, drop. Colin, you're going to go first on this one. John Terry,
holy cow.
Sergio Ramos, or Maldini? Start, bench, drop.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's an easy one. It's an easy one. I'll start Maldini every day of the week and twice on Sundays. I'll bench... Sergio Ramos, and I'll drop John Terry.
Chaka?
I start Maldini, I bench John Terry, and I drop Sergio Ramos.
Wow. You?
Yeah.
If we're talking defenders, John Terry is one of the best defenders the Premier League has seen. Not better than Maldini, and Sergio Ramos, well, you know what I think of him defensively.
I know what Stevie thinks of him now. I know what you think of him, too. You think the same?
I'm playing Maldini, the same as all the guys. I'm benching John Terry, and I'm presuming Sergio Ramos is unavailable anyway.
Right, yeah.
For multiple records.
Over the last 2 years, either injury or suspension, he's probably not around, right?
I'm being presumptuous.
Yeah.
Stevie phoned in and said, yeah.
It's not a bad bet. It's not a bad assumption with Ramos. All right, that's it for us. Colin, great stuff. Safe travels from Buffalo to Cameroon. Shaq, always great to be with you. ESPN FC, of course, available to you 7 days a week. Don't miss a single episode.